It's Light the Tower.
Say goodnight to this one.
Your daily look around the world of sports with Horns 24/7 insider Jeff Howe on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Light it up on a Friday. This is Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. I am Jeff Howe. However you're listening, wherever you're listening, we just thank you so much for tuning in to another presentation of this two-hour adventure we go through each and every weekday. Lost Our Way Friday is becoming a theme because for the second Friday in a row, Craig is not here. Not to call college baseball like he was last weekend. He's getting a little downtime, well-deserved downtime. In case you missed it, Craig was honored this week. Austin Chronicle Best of Austin Readers Poll for 2021 Sports Broadcaster of the Year. Very, very well-deserved honor for the franchise, the voice of the Longhorns, the Hall of Famer, Craig Way. But you know what that means? That means I am here and riding shotgun in the always prominent role behind the glass, twisting and tweaking the dials. He is the publisher, curator, otherwise major domo at FlexATX, FlexATX.com, at FLXATX on Twitter and Instagram. Did I get the Instagram handle right, Snoop?
Yeah.
The one and only Snoop Daniel. Snoop, how are you doing on a Friday?
I'm good. It's the same across all platforms, the username. You know, some people, you know, get that. That's very important. It helps.
It's important for branding, but, you know, you some companies run into issues where somebody might claim something just because. So you might have to throw an underscore in there, and nobody wants to do that.
It's so evil, people that do that, too, because a lot of times they should leave the DMs open and not private it in case somebody wants to at least make an offer for the account. So anyway, that's a whole nother conversation.
Is it
social media?
Is this
etiquette?
Just me? I don't know. This isn't like old man yelling at cloud, but there's something to me, Snoop, that's highly unstable about Instagram and Twitter handles that have underscores in them.
Mm. Well, it's done out of necessity.
I know. Some people can't help it. But
I mean, because they want their handle to be so close to this particular thing that they have to throw an armpit in there, whatever.
So I was worried I was going to be late today because I had some business to conduct. And my business to conduct, I'll hold this up. Thank you for everybody watching on Twitch. I'll hold this up for everybody on Twitch to see. Boom, got my second COVID shot. I am fully vaccinated as of today. So
that's why I can't lie to my parents. I already tried it.
They're like, what'd you try to do?
They're like, did you get your shot? I'm like, yes. They're like,
oh, Snoop.
Send us a shot of your card. I'm like, I'm not 7 years old. I'm not going to lie.
Even though you did lie.
I did.
Oh, Snoop. Well,
like I said, I will get, wait for the pill.
Well, you'll be waiting a while. The shot's not bad, Snoop. I hate needles in the shots.
Do you?
Shot's fine. My arm's not as sore as it was on the first shot. Right after.
So my homie Zach Lucero, he took his second shot in 2 days, no symptoms, and then it dropped him like a sack on the third day. I'm like, whoa. And like, it's so much that he missed flex last week. I had to like, that was tough.
Yeah.
Man, like I said, like, I admire people who are able to host a radio show basically solo, because that's
2 hours by yourself is rough. But I'm not by myself. No. I've got you with me, Snoop. So we got a lot to get to today. We've got two Longhorn notebooks, one at the bottom of this hour, one at the bottom of hour number two. Inconceivable. It is a Florida Friday, and there's so much that's just stereotypical Florida in our story today, Snoop. But there's one line in the report I read, because, you know, typically the day of, unless somebody sends me something that's really good, Friday morning is when I call all the finalists, if you will, for our Florida Friday story. Mm. There's a line, Snoop, in that story that had me giggling, like audibly giggling, while I was waiting in line to get my COVID shot today. So I'll share that with the listening audience coming up in Inconceivable. One bit of news we're waiting on. It's a light weekend on the sports menu
it
on
is.
The 40 acres.
Oh, yeah.
Got some softball, but baseball's off, and we're done with spring football. So the athletic year is starting to wind to an end. But the one big bit of baseball news we are waiting on, we're waiting for the NCAA to announce the 20 finalists for regional hosts. Look, Texas is going to be on that list. We're just waiting to get the word from the NCAA when that's going to be announced. So once that happens, we will break in with that news and confirm that there will be, Texas will be a finalist. But look, Texas is going to be one of the top 16 national seeds. The question is, can Texas do enough? And by doing enough, basically, can the Longhorns handle their business, get the win over Rice on Tuesday, get a series win over West Virginia going into the Big 12 tournament? That should lock up a top 8 national seed, regardless of what happens in Oklahoma City. So we'll keep an eye out for that for regional hosts as we go on today. Snoop, anything top of mind for you? How was the flex?
It was good. We try to talk as much Westwood SQT as possible, and that's really what's been taking up most of my – hold on, let me put – sorry.
What'd you do?
Something.
Oh, yeah. What's been taking up most of my energy, like, yesterday and today is, you know, like we have our reporters, which are basically like student correspondents to help kind of – you know, with the culture as far as like covering their kids, because it helps feed us content, getting them ready to cover football, maybe for the first time.
Yeah.
Teaching kids how to get in right position and how to turn your phone sideways, all the little intricacies.
Right. Give me this, because I've hired, been in the hiring process of hiring like recruiting reporters and staff members. Some staff members work out really good. Like, you know, with Mike Roach has been great for us.
Yeah, some of them turn into Mike Roaches, into Jeff Howes.
And you get a young cat like Nick Harris, and Nick does an outstanding job for us at Horns 24/7. Which, by the way, get over to the site right now. That insider piece, our weekly team news notes and nuggets.
Y'all got a good team.
That collection over there. Thank you, Snoop.
I do.
It's an interesting piece. Chip Brown had a very in-depth conversation with Rick Neuheisel, who offers his perspective on Steve Sarkisian and the Texas job. It's a great read, a lot of really good stuff in there. So get over to Horns 24/7 to check that out. But yeah, so you get a Mike Roach or a Nick Harris, and then you get some people that don't work out or don't maximize their ceiling, if you will. We talk about player development. So I'll ask you this, Snoop, at the risk of losing listeners, which I don't think everybody finds this as interesting as I do, but hopefully some of you do. The process of trying to find your student reporters, like, do you get volunteers?
Yes.
Is there a wait list? Like, what does that look like?
I don't call out for it, because that keeps the pressure off.
Okay.
You know, like, I don't ask for it. So if somebody, you know, volunteers or ask for it, I basically say, yeah, you want to do it? You can go full bore. You know, you do you. And like you said, like, some are Nick Harris's, some are young Jeff Howes, but you know what? I would say that is, I'm almost scared to say it's like 5 or 10% of the people who wind up doing it. And it's not a knock on anybody. It's just some people are just built different.
Some people can naturally gravitate to that stuff, and some people it takes some work. And then,
and once they find out it's work, then they get disconnected. Like, I have to stay out here the whole game? Yes. Yeah. You can't go out there for the first quarter and then leave and ghost. That happens so often. First quarter picture, so hype. You won't hear from them again until, like, the next week. I'm like, what happened? I was watching the game, and that's fine. Again, no pressure.
Right. Well, especially now that we've got the Friday night flex, which, by the way, during high school football season, if you want the best, the most comprehensive and best, most in-depth coverage of high school football games in the area, the Friday night flex with Snoop is the best way to do it. But that's got to be the selling point, right? You can't have a student reporter be a correspondent on Friday Night Flex if they didn't watch a game.
Right. So this helps for summer, you know, because it teaches them, hey, like, you probably just want to stay near the end zone, because, you know, 5-yard pass is not going to move the needle for anyone.
Yeah.
But, like, if you get, like, Braylon James out of Del Valle, who has offers from Ohio State.
He's blowing up. Yeah.
Dude.
Massive spring for him.
Last night we asked who has the bigger upside, Caleb Burton or Braylon James, and I think it's a legit question now.
Yeah.
I love Caleb Burton. I really do, but I feel like if I were Sark and I'm chilling, and, you know, I know Caleb is already Ohio State commit, but if I had the choice of the two, I might go with Braylon James. He's definitely the lower star. I mean, Caleb is a certified number one wide receiver recruit.
Right now, Braylon James right now at 24/7 Sports in the composite number 121 overall in the country, the nation's number 17 ranked wide receiver prospect.
He hasn't played a snap class of his junior year. That's how good this kid is.
Yeah, and he's impressed at some of the camp stuff. That's, you know, that scene is starting to come back as we're slowly making the march back to normal. So, definitely there's a lot of talent, high school football talent in this area. Trust me, I covered preps in this area in the early to mid 2000s, and it just the talent level just keeps ticking up and ticking up and ticking up. And as more people move here, you know, your suburban areas get bigger. It's only going to get better from here on out for the greater Austin area in terms of the caliber of high school talent. It's not to say that this area hasn't produced great players, obviously, but just the volume, it's just going to continue to get bigger.
I will say that I heard a rumor yesterday. There's a kid who's class of 25, which means he's just leaving, like, homeroom at junior high, who has an offer from Oklahoma State. He just got offered yesterday, and it's official because he tagged all of the coaches and they were retweeting him. But apparently he's from Killeen, but I don't even want to say what school he's trying to move to in Austin. But this is where, like, you discover those guys is in sevens, because it's really, they're still so under the radar. But you can notice, I remember the first time I saw this kid by the name of Elijah Higgins. He wound up signing with Stanford. Mm-hmm. He played with Bowie. When he was coming out of his freshman year as a sophomore at these state sevens tournaments, he was manning these seniors. I'm like, who is this kid? And nobody knew who he was. I don't even think he was, like, on the map, per se. But he wound up getting several Division I offers shortly after.
And his decision came down to Texas. I forgot the third school that was in there. It might have been Ohio State. I don't remember. But I know it was Texas and Stanford.
It's fun and very, like, rewarding to watch if you choose to dig that deep into it. Because you might discover a gym. Like I said, as a sports fan, very rewarding.
That's why I love 7-on-7s. I'll take credit for it. I mean, I was the first person to see Caleb Jones. And it was at the coming out of his freshman year. They were at the Midway state qualifier. And kind of like you said, Snoop, I see this kid, 6'2", kind of wiry. I'm like, man, was this it always makes you feel good when you're at stuff like that. And you're like, man, is this like some
you just see
some
somebody
senior that we just missed?
Yes,
or what?
I always think they're seniors.
And then you hear like, no, he's just a freshman, going to be a sophomore. And his dad played in the NFL, and obviously he's a Cowboys fan. I was really familiar with Robert Jones. So I was like, wow, it's interesting. So, yeah, it's stuff like this that really keeps you going. And I know you do it. Snoop, for those of you who don't know, like, Snoop, it's not a bit. Like, he really does it for the kids, for everybody, and makes sure schools have as much representation as possible. But it is fun. And I know one guy that you can credit. I know Texas fans don't necessarily like hearing his name. Oklahoma fans do, but the exposure Latrell McCutchen got from Friday Night Tikes, that was a huge deal, man. That was a huge deal for youth football in this area. So it's fun to see the youth scene and the prep scene continue to get better and better in the greater Austin area as we go forward. A couple topics we'll get to today. Coming up in the notebook, I do want to get to a topic that I've been trying to get to all week, and we'll finally get to it today. Clint Buckley, my colleague at 24/7 Sports and kind of our national group of writers, just put out a list earlier this week ranking the Big 12's top 10 football players for the 2021 season. There's one Longhorn on there. Well, everybody gets three guesses on who it is, and the first two don't count. We'll go through that list, and the topic is going to be, for me, which Longhorn players can get into that list by the end of the season, and I've got one who you might not necessarily put at the front of the line, but I think he's got a legitimate beef, a legitimate gripe, a legitimate claim to be in that mix right now. We'll get to that in the next segment. We're also going to talk about Greg Brown's decision. The decision to declare for the draft shouldn't have taken anybody by surprise. I'll admit, Snoop, I was a little bit surprised that he signed with an agent and just completely shut the door because, and we'll get into it later, at this time last year, I think we all thought 1 year from now, Greg Brown's going in the lottery. No question. Now, from some of the buzz I've heard, and you start seeing some of the mock drafts, he's a late one, and he might, there's a chance he could slip into round two. I don't think he will.
Oh, man,
but,
I hope not.
But, no, I don't think he will, but we'll get into that later when we talk about Greg Brown's decision and look at how that impacts the Longhorns on the hardwood. And, again, we're tracking the NCAA announcement for the 20 finalists for venues for regionals in the NCAA tournament. It's just not a matter of if, but when that's announced, Texas will be revealed as a finalist. And again, expect the Longhorns to host a regional for sure, and in all likelihood, a super regional. Meaning, Snoop, that's good for me because as long as Texas is alive in the NCAA tournament, I won't have to travel until Omaha. So, two thumbs up for that. I want to get to something that just, I was thinking about this in the car on the way here after getting my shot, and I caught Bucky and Aaron, which, by the way, Bucky and Aaron, some great interviews this morning.
That was fun.
HornFM.com if you missed any of that. It's always good to hear a nice sit-down with Too Tall Jones. They had a really interesting conversation with Britt Hager. All that stuff from their time with the Austin NFL alumni chapter, the golf tournament they've got going on. All that stuff is at HornFM.com if you missed any of it this morning. But their interview with Derek Johnson. I was thinking about this, Snoop. Like, you think of, I was just thinking about, okay, what, there's kind of two different things I was thinking about. One, when I think about Texas football recruiting classes, where would I rank the 2001 class that Derek Johnson was a part of? Because when you go through, and I'm not talking about just in kind of the modern era, the dot-com era of recruiting, I'm talking all time in school history. I think you put that 01 class up there as it was on signing day. I think you put that up there with the Wooster Bunch in terms of classes you have to talk about as the best group of freshmen to ever come through this program. You think about that 01 class at the start. First off, you have to you include Quan Cosby in that group because Quan signed with the 2001 class, then he went and played minor league baseball, then came back and was a part of the 2005 class, which in my opinion, pound for pound, the 2005 class is the best class Mack Brown ever signed. When you look at 15 signees, and in that 15 signees, you've got Colt McCoy, Jamal Charles, Roy Miller, Quan Cosby, Roderick McElroy, Henry Melton, Chris Hall was in that class. You've got a boatload of NFL players. On top of the fact that you've got guys like Chris Hall, didn't play in the NFL, but was an All-American, a Remington finalist. That 15-member class, pound for pound, is the best class Mack Brown ever signed. But you look at, and that's just kind of per capita, but you just look at the amount of talent in that 2001 class. Like I said, so you can tie Quan Cosby signed with that 2001 class and look at everything Quan accomplished. You can look at the record books or go back and look at the eye test and say, man, Quan Cosby, Jordan Shipley, who's the best receiver in school history? Flip a coin, take your pick. Like you can, there's a legit, Quan has a legitimate claim to that. You signed two Jim Thorpe Award winners in that class. Snoop, Aaron Ross initially signed with the 2001 class and then ended up getting to Texas later on. But you signed two Jim Thorpe Award winners because Michael Huff was in that class. Oh, and by the way, Cedric Griffin was in that class too. So you had three defensive back signees in that one class that ended up playing in the NFL. Two Thorpe Award winners, two first-round picks and a second-round pick. And Cedric Griffin started on a national championship team. That's just in the secondary. Derek Johnson was obviously a part of that class. All-American, Benerick Award winner, Butkus Award winner. Cedric Benson's in that class. All-American, four straight 1,000-yard seasons. Doak Walker Award winner, first-round pick. Jonathan Scott was an All-American offensive tackle in that class. So you just look at just the amount of talent recruited in that 2001 class. That class was responsible for They played in a Rose Bowl. A lot of those guys played in the national championship game and helped Texas win a national championship in 2005. So that 2001 class has a rightful claim as the most decorated and, quite frankly, the best recruiting class in the history of this program. But that also got me thinking, and feel free to chime in on the Specs text line. It is open, 337-3776. It also got me thinking about a topic that came up on the flagship message board at Horns 24/7. And the topic was, what year of Texas football just frustrated you the most, just broke your heart? What season was that? What year of Texas football hurt the most? And I know a lot of people will just automatically go to 2008 or 2009 because the 08 team, I don't know that there's a lot of people that would disagree with me. The 08 team was better than the 09 team. And the 08 team, had it not been for the BCS, had the BCS gone a few decimal points the other way, a few decimal places the other way, the 08 team would have and should have played for a national championship. Should have beat Oklahoma in the regular season. And that just gut-wrenching loss in Lubbock to Texas Tech. Didn't play in the Big 12 championship game. Had to settle for beating Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl. It's not a terrible consolation prize. But the 08 team should have played for a national championship. So a lot of people go to 08. You go to 09 because even Mack Brown to this day is one of the people that will swear, if Colt McCoy doesn't get hurt, Texas beats Alabama. But the 2001 season, for me, just as a high school senior who grew up a Texas fan, that season for me, and somebody just mentioned on the text line, that's the season that hurts the most because Texas lost to Oklahoma in the regular season and then just proceeded to just take care of their business the rest of the way. Oklahoma loses late in the year to Oklahoma State. Texas ends up in the Big 12 championship game. And as that Saturday unfolded, Florida had a game. Florida and Tennessee were initially supposed to play the week of September 11th. That game, because of the 9/11 attacks, that game gets moved back to later in the year. It's played right before the Big 12 championship game. Tennessee upsets Florida, and then I'm thinking, dude, Texas is one win away from playing for a national championship. They were one win over Colorado away from playing for a national championship, 60 minutes away from playing for a national championship. And in the Big 12 championship game against the Colorado team, yes, Colorado had thumped Nebraska convincingly the week before, but that was a Colorado team Texas just decimated earlier in the year. Beat them like they stole something. And like the image of that game, there's two images I can't get out of my head in that game. One is the Chris Sims turnover where on the return, Cedric Benson, your freshman 1,000-yard rusher, and Mike Williams, your All-American tackle who goes in the top five in the draft a few months later, collide with each other trying to make a tackle on a turnover, and they're both out for the rest of the game. And at that point, it's really Snoop like picking up the sticks and just wishing you could commit the cardinal sin whenever you're playing a game and hit the reset button. You wish you could just hit the reset button at that point. Like, dude, this is a bad dream. This can't happen. Like I said, Texas just mauled Colorado earlier in the year. So that, and the other image is, you know, Chris Sims suffers a finger injury. Major comes off the bench, throws a touchdown pass right away to B.J. Johnson, points at the Colorado bench, and you're thinking, man, this is it. They're coming back. And then as the text line has lit up and reminded us, there was the Philip Giguiar call, the roughing the punter call. So, yeah, 0-1 hurts a lot when you think about it. So if you want to chime in on that, best recruiting classes you can think of, seasons of Texas football that hurt the most to you as a fan, we'll take your suggestions, your comments, anything you got on the Specs text line, 337-3776. But coming back, I want to get to this top 10, this list of top 10 players in the Big 12 and give you a Texas player that I think has a legitimate claim to be a part of that list right now, and it might not be a Longhorn you're necessarily thinking of. We'll do that when we come back on Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Why so sober? Craig Way not with us today. We've lost our way today, but it is me, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel here on Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Yeah, a lot of people agreeing with me in terms of moments, years, games as a Texas fan that just hurt so bad, that just frustrated you. A lot of folks agreeing with me on that Colorado game in 2001. I've used some time on the Longhorn Blitz podcast, especially in the offseason. By the way, anywhere you get your podcasts, just search Horns 24/7, click the subscribe button to get every episode of Longhorn Blitz along with the flagship and State of Recruiting, and don't forget to leave us a 5-star review. But I've used a lot of time on that podcast, Snoop, to ask Rod about that Big 12 championship game, and he kind of confirmed what a lot of people on the outside thought, for one, that once everybody figured out and learned, and I think even Max said it to the team, you know, you're 60 minutes away from playing for a national championship, man, Chris Sims just put so much pressure on himself and probably try to do too much. And on top of the fact, and I didn't know this until Rod said it on the podcast a couple of years ago, Carl Boreas, the defensive coordinator, completely changed the game plan. The game plan that worked when Texas beat Colorado 41-7 earlier in the year, completely changed the game plan, I think the night before the game. And didn't work, and, you know, I think Bobby Purify might still be running if you go look at where Texas Stadium formerly was. But, yeah, it's just one of those games that just you kind of wish what could have been. And here's the deal. I don't think Texas would have beaten Miami in the Rose Bowl. But, A, I would have loved to have seen that game, and, B, it would have been a much better opponent for Miami than Nebraska turned out to be. Like, Husker fans should thank Larry Coker for calling the dogs off, and because Miami could have scored 60 that night if they wanted to. So, at any rate, we'll keep coming out with that on the Specs text line, 337-3776. Whatever you've got, we'll take all your comments, questions. Don't forget, we've got a Card Break Friday coming up, top of hour number two.
Yes.
And we're going to be opening it up. We got some basketball, and I've got one baseball just because I'm so dang impatient. And we've got a great sponsor, Brown Eye Clothing, that's going to launch online here in a couple of weeks. It's a great company, and we'll get into that when we do our Pack Break Friday.
Sid the Lizard on Twitch asked me, what's with the hat, Snoop? Are you an information booth? I am, but it's for Brown Eye.
Brown Eye. See, and I've got my Brown Eye flat bill right here. So we'll get into Brown Eye. It's a Lamar and the folks at Brown Eye. It's for a great cause. It's a great company. And Snoop, like the quality of the lids and the shirts are legit.
Yeah, I like the flat brims. I haven't had a flat brim in a while, so I'm rocking it. And, you know, brown-eyed boy.
So we'll get into all that coming up in hour number two. But right now, it's time for the notebook.
Here we go. Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
So I want to get into this. Clint Buckley authored it, but this was our national desk, our national college football desk at 24/7 Sports, put out a list. This came out on May 9th is when this was published, and that would have been on Sunday. It's published Sunday afternoon, and it runs down the top 10 players in the Big 12 for 2021. Now, this list is going to probably fluctuate a lot between now and the start of the season, and you're going to see everybody have lists of this variety. But Bijan Robinson is the only Longhorn on the list. I don't think that surprises anybody. He comes in at number three. The only two players in the Big 12 that our folks at 24/7 Sports like better than Bijan Robinson in 2021 in this conference, Breece Hall, the talented running back at Iowa State, and Spencer Rattler, the quarterback at Oklahoma, who's I've seen mock drafts for 2022 that have Spencer Rattler going number one overall. But, Snoop, you know what a mock draft is worth in 1 year out? It's not worth the paper it's printed on. It's fun for us to talk about, but that's about all it is. I'll run down 10 through 4. Letty Brown, the West Virginia running back at 10. Deuce Vaughn, Snoop, a guy you're very familiar with.
Where?
The K-State running back at number 9, the ninth best player in the Big 12.
You think he can put on some more weight. And
I don't think it's putting on more weight. I just think my concern with Deuce Vaughn is because you're only – I mean – he's only going to be able to carry so much weight before it's just a detriment to him.
He's only like 5'7".
I just wonder, man, usage with him to me is a big deal. And if K-State can be smart about the way they use him to prolong his career, increase his longevity in college, that to me is the trick with Deuce Vaughn. Charlie Kohler, the Iowa State tight end, at number 8. Nick Benito, Oklahoma's outside linebacker, at number 7. Brock Purdy, the Iowa State quarterback, at number 6. By default, because Iowa State – you know, it's going to be a preseason top 10 team. I think you have to put Purdy in there. I don't know that I necessarily would because I didn't think he played that well last year. Josh Sills, the Oklahoma State offensive lineman, at 5. Marvin Mims, the Oklahoma wide receiver, coming in at 4. So one Longhorn on this list. Here's the one Longhorn, Snoop, who I think has a legitimate claim to be on this list. It's not Alfred Collins. It's not DeMarvian Overshown. How about DeSean Jameson? DeSean Jameson. And, you know, is DeSean Jameson the kind of guy that's going to go really high in the NFL draft? Probably not, because teams just right now at the top of the draft just aren't in the market for, you know, 5'9 corners. It's just the way it is. But that doesn't mean that DeSean Jameson is any less of a football player, because according to Pro Football Focus, DeSean Jameson had the most coverage snaps without a touchdown allowed during the 2020 season, 352 coverage snaps without a touchdown allowed. And yes, I've talked a lot about that corner position at Texas. Yes, those guys need to do a better job of A, being in a position to make a play on the ball, and then B, having the kind of ball skills. And ball skills are one of those things you can hone them, you can develop them, but more often than not, you kind of either got them or you don't. They just come natural to some people, and to some people they just don't. They struggle with it. I think DeShaun Jameson is one of those ball hawks that if the technique is right, if you put him in the right position, he can make plays on the ball. He can force turnovers. He can make those game-changing plays on defense. So DeShaun Jameson as a corner, I think, has a claim, but what the kicker with DeShaun Jameson, especially now that Jalen Waddle's off to the NFL and he was hurt last year, there might not be a better return man in college football than DeShaun Jameson. And yes, you know, there's the kickoff returns for touchdowns he's had, the one that flipped the Oklahoma State game. We've seen him take punts back to the house. He had the kickoff return for a touchdown for, I think it was down to the 3-yard line or whatever, the 96-yard return in the TCU game that was called back. He's been great on returns. But this is part of the reason why I think he's got a claim. You can look at the return number, certainly. But you go back to the Texas Tech game when Texas had to have that 15-point rally in the final minutes just to get it to overtime and avoid a massive upset loss. DeShaun Jameson helped Texas win that game because if you look at what started the Texas comeback in Lubbock, they had a mishit ball on a sky kick. They attempted a sky kick. It was a mishit ball, and Texas ends up getting it in great field position. Boom, boom, boom. They go down and score. Dicker gets the onside kick. We know how that game ends. But why was Texas Tech trying to sky kick it? Matt Wells admitted right after the game he did not want DeShaun Jameson's hands anywhere near the football. That's how much of an impact he can have on a game. He can influence decisions like that that can help flip field position without him ever getting his hands on the ball. I guarantee you in the punt return game, there will be teams that look to kick away from him. And we've seen sometimes, unless you've got a Michael Dixon, a guy who's just a stud, sometimes when you try to directional punt or force things in the punt game, you can shank one, so you can flip the field without ever touching the ball. That's the kind of presence DeShaun Jameson has. And I'll be honest, Snoop, that was one, you know, special teams was one thing under Tom Herman that, you know, there were some good things that happened under Tom Herman. There were some things we can complain about. Special teams is one of those things that I expected it to be a lot cleaner than it was. I wouldn't say special teams were bad under Tom Herman, but it was just, the kicking game too often on Saturdays felt like feast or famine. It felt like either it's awesome and it's helping you win a game or it's costing you a game. It never kind of got to that steady point. So that's why hiring Jeff Banks, one of the best special teams coaches, maybe the best special teams coach in college football, and that player development piece that we always talk about, especially with some of the young linebackers and the bigger type skill guys that you've got in this program, Texas should be in the mix to have the best kicking game in the Big 12. When you consider all the talent and the athleticism that you can have on your coverage teams and your return teams, maybe the best return man in the country in DeShaun Jameson. And what should be at this point, by this time in their Texas careers, what should be the best punter and kicker combo in the conference in Ryan Bishevsky and Cameron Dicker. And, I know – Sark said coming out of the spring that Cameron Dicker's in the mix for that punting job. Snoop, I don't like that. No. And it has nothing to do with Cameron Dicker's ability as a punter. I just want to keep that leg as fresh as possible for when you really need him on field goals. Because he's already your kickoff guy. He does field goals and PATs. I just want to make sure he's as now if it's not going to hamper him on field goals, then fine, let it go, let him have at it. To me, his upside as a kicker outweighs whatever positive he can bring you as a punter. So how about that? We're sitting here, Snoop, in the middle of May, and we had a Texas special teams conversation. Talking kickers and punters. How about them apples? It's going to be a long offseason, folks, if we're already talking punters and kickers in the middle of May. But that's what we do here on Light the Tower. That's how in-depth we go.
Would they ever do college sevens?
No.
No?
No.
Sounds fun.
You're off to your, you know, riding those guys up until probably, I think, 09, maybe 20, the 2010 offseason was the last time they did it. But I know it started with Rod V, those guys. They would meet up with Texas State either down in San Marcos or go to Denius and just have kind of an unofficial 7-on-7. I know I'd talked to folks on both sides, and the last couple of years they did it, things were getting pretty chippy. Oh. So they kind of put the kibosh on that. But,
yeah.
No, it won't be in an official capacity, Snoop, especially, you know, I just think your off seasons are too structured now. You know, to make that happen.
To try to squeeze that in.
Yeah.
On top of.
With so much strength conditioning work you're doing now.
I mean, how fun would that be to watch? I mean, he's gone now, but like Trevor Lawrence, like slinging the pill around to.
Like just to see what it looks like. Like mm-hmm. I would love to see. I would love to see what guys like Lincoln Riley and Sark could put on 7-on-7 cards, what they could draw up. You know? So, but no, I think those guys. Your skill guys get so much work anyway in your inner squad sevens. You know, if you're doing it the right way at a place like Texas or Oklahoma and you're recruiting the right kind of guys and developing them, you know, that inner squad sevens work you're getting in the summer, it's gonna be better than anything you get outside, just as good or better. So, all right, we'll keep the Texas football talk going throughout the show because that's what we do here. But coming up after the break, it is Friday. So that means we take a venture to the most flaccid state in the country. It's Florida Friday on Inconceivable on Light the Tower, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring.
Inconceivable! Inconceivable!
You keep using the horn. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable means it's brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and the fine folks at Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. If you or your athlete have an injury or ailment that requires orthopedic attention, go to austin-orthopedics.com and let Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and the folks at Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine get you back in the game, not just on the field, the court, get you back in the game of life. austin-orthopedics.com. All right, Snoop. This comes from Newsweek. It is Florida Friday. Now, I appreciate all the submissions, Jim and Lago Vista. You're one of the best we have submitting Florida stories. A couple of you on the text line like to send us submissions. And, of course, we got the one, Snoop, you saw about the guy in Florida whose Hummer exploded because, like a lot of the idiots out there, filled containers with gasoline that shouldn't have been filled with gasoline and stupid. The car explodes. So, yeah, just, boy.
Inconceivable.
Just when you think the human race is making progress, we do something like that and totally redeem ourselves. So, Snoop, I can't set the story up. I'm just going to read it. From Newsweek, Florida man jailed for punching fellow customer in mask dispute. A 24-year-old Florida man named Nashad Potts allegedly punched a 28-year-old man. Nashad Potts.
Sorry, okay, just check.
Allegedly punched a 28-year-old man named Eli Paez over a face mask dispute before allegedly punching Paez. Potts reportedly announced that Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, quote, said we don't have to wear masks. Now, this isn't a mask issue necessarily. It is, but it's not, you know, are you anti-mask or not? This isn't the point. I'll get to the inconceivable part here. The alleged incident occurred last Sunday. You ready for this, Snoop?
Yes.
While Paez was waiting for ice cream at a Dairy Queen fast food restaurant in Key West. First of all, that's partly inconceivable because I didn't know there was a Dairy Queen in Key West, Florida. So I guess if you're going to go down there and hang out with Mike Leach in the offseason, you can get you a Blizzard. Who'd have thunk it? Potts reportedly became angry after a takeout window employee asked him to wear a mask. According to Paez, quote, he freaked out and said, DeSantis said we don't have to wear masks. This is Paez. I said, sir, it's a privately owned business. If you want ice cream, just put a mask on. Here's the kicker. What happened to the music?
Sorry, I've accidentally hit the wrong thing. It's coming back.
Okay.
Sorry.
I was like,
I don't know
if I had a stop down moment or what. Okay. Here's the inconceivable part, Snoop. You ready for this? Mm-hmm. And this is the part that made me giggle in the doctor's office. Paez said that Potts then farted on him before smacking the hat off of his head. What?
Bro.
You just going to turn around and just snap one off on somebody. First off, the fact that, like, I guess, I don't know if you have one holstered or you can do it on command, but
you have one holstered.
I mean, if I was the person that got sprayed, if you will, I would be too shocked to, like, you could punch me in the face and I couldn't fight back because I would be so shocked because that was your initial response. So Paez got pooted on and then got the hat knocked off his head. Thank you for that. Paez, a transgender man, told Potts that he wasn't afraid of him.
Never mind. So sorry, please. I think I just missed the transgender part.
Paez, a transgender man, told Potts that he wasn't afraid of him. In response, Potts allegedly called Paez an anti-lesbian slur. And I'm not saying trying to hide the slur. I'm saying it says right here in the story, an anti-lesbian slur. Paez said that before he knew it, Potts punched him in the mouth. Paez said he fell back and hit his head. The attack reportedly left him with a hole in his lip, head injury, and short-term memory loss. He was treated at a local medical center for his injuries. Potts told police that he was defending himself after Paez followed and harassed him, but that didn't matter. Police charged Potts with a felony charge of battery and booked him into the Stock Island County Jail on a $30,000 bond. I mean, is not wearing a mask at a Dairy Queen window worth a felony charge in the $30,000 bond? Probably not.
Displaced anger.
You placed anger at your south end and pooted on somebody in mid-dispute, so that's wild. That is wild. First off, like I said, we got a Dairy Queen in Key West. You had...
disgusting act.
Yeah, as somebody said, I'd be laughing. I wouldn't be shocked. I would be laughing. Snoop, you have the coda drop?
Oh no, that's gone. Unfortunately,
it just shows you where we are in our show. It's you and I doing the show.
Yeah, we're like, do you have that commercial that sounds like a poop?
We're getting texts like, play the car fart sound. Play the car fart sound.
If you heard that moment in time, it was magical. You have to just.
During the break, I will have Snoop look for poop drops just for you guys since it's Friday, and that's what we do.
Yeah, fart Friday. Forget Florida Friday. Now sports Friday.
Oh,
why
man.
Not?
Snoop, I love doing a show with you.
It's inconceivable.
When it's just us. Yeah, the whole show is inconceivable. This is why I'm glad we don't have formats that we go through, because if Craig saw our format for Friday, he might have a heart attack.
Also, I have to be careful with poop sound effects because, like, if like they're too, you know,
vulgar.
Yeah, then I can get like in trouble. So I think that one I played was stupid because I made that with my tongue.
Oh, did you really?
I didn't. That wasn't actual.
Okay, because I was gonna be like, man, you found one of the longest poop drops.
I do have
in
one
recorded history,
but I think it's. No, it might be too. It might have too many layers to it.
I'll tell you what.
I don't want the FCC to.
I'll tell you what.
Made me lose my job.
Check it out during a break. And if it's cool, just bump right back with it. How about we do that? Pack Break Friday and.
Windbreak Friday.
A little. It is a Windbreak Friday. And a little something extra on the trading card front. We'll have fun. And hour number two, Light the Tower, live, local, digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.